Chapter 87. Stick shifts should be outlawed, Langdon grumbled, struggling with the SUV's manual transmission as the vehicle jerked gracelessly southward toward Folimanca Park.
Or perhaps just the men who pretend to drive them, Catherine offered.
Langdon had to smile, grateful for her levity amid all the tension. His mind had been elsewhere, thinking about the ambassador's abrupt departure. Nagel had put herself at enormous professional risk for them, which Langdon appreciated, but his primary concern was for their safety and figuring out why Catherine's book was in the crosshairs of the CIA. Those answers lie inside Threshold. With luck, his optimistic gut feeling about gaining access to the hidden facility would not turn out to be delusional overconfidence. We'll know in a matter of minutes. Catherine's suspicions that Stargate had something to do with their predicament, meanwhile, seemed unlikely to Langdon. He didn't know too much about the discredited program, but he did know that even Hollywood had enjoyed a laugh at the CIA's expense, releasing a George Clooney picture sardonically titled The Men Who Stare at Goats. It was based on an alleged Stargate experiment in which subjects tried to kill goats by staring at them. Despite Langdon's skepticism about remote viewing, the basic concept was more than 7,000 years old. The ancient Sumerians had written about mystical star journeys, out-of-body experiences in which their minds traveled to the stars to view distant worlds. Of course, there was a lot of opium involved, Langdon knew, wondering if maybe Threshold might be exploring drug-induced altered states, perhaps even relating them to non-local consciousness. Catherine had mentioned earlier a new class of drugs known as dissociatives, which apparently were accompanied by a sense of being disconnected from one's body. And certainly the CIA had a long history of running secret drug experiments, including on the Harvard campus. One of the most notorious CIA projects ever to reach the public eye had been codenamed MK Ultra, which secretly administered LSD to unsuspecting college students to study the effect of the drug on young minds. Eerily, one of the test subjects had been Harvard undergrad Ted Kaczynski, who later became known as the Unabomber. And while the CIA testified that Kaczynski had never been given drugs, they did admit subjecting him to experimental interrogation techniques, which quite possibly could have destabilized his mind. The Harvard drug lore did not stop there. Concurrently with MK Ultra, faculty psychologist Timothy Leary launched the infamous Harvard Psilocybin Project, which encouraged students to explore the mind-expanding benefits of hallucinogens. Turn on, tune in, drop out. Many now suspected that Leary might have been working undercover with the CIA. I'm curious, Langdon said, turning to Catherine, who was staring out the window. In your book, did you write about chemically induced altered states?
Of course, she said.
As I mentioned earlier, certain hallucinogens will decrease GABA levels in the brain, thereby lowering the brain's filtering mechanism. This implies, in my opinion, that the out-of-body sensations associated with hallucinogens are a reflection of unfiltered reality, rather than hallucination. It made sense, and there was certainly historical precedent for drugs as a road to enlightenment, from the ancient texts of the Rig Veda and Eleusinian Mysteries to Huxley's 1954 classic, The Doors of Perception. Great writers had long been suggesting psychedelic substances were a way to expand human consciousness and perceive reality unfiltered. I've never asked you, Catherine, Langdon ventured casually. Does your consciousness research involve doing drugs yourself? She turned and stared at him, looking amused he would even ask the question.
Robert, really? The brain is an incredibly delicate mechanism, and trying to alter it with hallucinogens is like trying to adjust a priceless Rolex wristwatch with a sledgehammer. Drugs induce altered states by creating a jarring chain reaction of neurological disruptions that can have permanent effects. As enlightening as you may find that brief experience, you risk undermining long-term synaptic integrity and neurotransmitter equilibrium. For most hallucinogens, The primary mechanism through which they exert their effects is the dysregulation of serotonin, a very bad idea, as it can easily lead to cognitive deficits, emotional instability, and even enduring psychotic states. Langdon nodded with a smile. I'll take that as a no. Sorry, she said sheepishly. I have colleagues who experiment responsibly with various psychedelics, and there's certainly a place for that. I just get nervous when young people assume it's all safe. It's not. Langdon downshifted as smoothly as possible to avoid colliding with a tram. I assume you were asking, Catherine said, because you think drugs might have something to do with threshold? That seems like a possibility, Langdon said. You mentioned in your talk last night a host of new drugs that seem to increase psychic ability. If you consider the countless documented cases of crimes being solved by psychics, it's not a big leap to imagine the CIA trying to develop drugs to enhance psychic ability. The applications would be endless. I suppose, she said, but it's not exactly a cutting-edge idea. True, the CIA would be a bit late to that party. The Oracle of Delphi had regularly seen visions of the future while breathing gases escaping through a fissure in Mount Parnassus. The Aztecs spoke to future spirits while tripping on peyote, and the Egyptians saw tomorrow's events while consuming mandrake and blue lotus. Our modern pioneers, names like Castaneda, Burroughs, McKenna, Huxley, Leary, were actually following centuries of souls who had attempted to expand their minds with chemicals. I really don't think threshold is related to drugs, Catherine said. There's very little about them in my manuscript. So what's your best guess? Langdon asked, guiding the SUV southward along the river toward Folimanca Park. Catherine leaned her head back against the headrest. I'd say their concern lies with my experiments in precognition. Langdon recalled Catherine's precognition tests. A subject's brain reacting to an image before actually visually seeing it. The randomly selected image, as if by magic, appeared in the subject's consciousness before the computer had even selected which image to show. To be honest, he said, I'm not sure I even understand your precognition experiment. If the brain registers the image before the computer has even chosen the image, then it's as if your brain is making the choice and then telling the computer which image to choose. Consciousness is creating reality. That is one possibility, yes. Is that what you believe? Not exactly. In my model, your brain is not making the choice, but rather receiving the choice. Langdon glanced over. Receiving the choice from where? From the field of consciousness that surrounds you. Even though you feel like you're actively making choices yourself, in fact, those choices have been made already and are streaming into your brain. That's where you lose me. If I'm only imagining I'm making my choices, then there's no free will. True, but maybe free will is overrated. How can you possibly... Catherine leaned over toward the driver's seat and kissed him on the lips. Then she sat back and smiled. I have no idea where that decision came from, but does it really matter? Isn't the illusion of free will enough? Langdon considered it a moment and placed a hand on her thigh. I believe more research is required. She laughed. Craving an out-of-body experience, Professor? Actually, I think I'd prefer to stay in my body for that particular activity. Don't be so sure, she said. As it turns out, sex is very closely related to the noetic view of out-of-body experiences. Langdon groaned. Does everything with you relate to work? In this case, it does. As you know, during sexual climax, the mind experiences a blissful moment of oblivion in which the entire corporeal world evaporates. Climax is considered in every culture to be the most intensely pleasurable experience a person could have. A blank slate detachment from oneself, a momentary abandonment of all concern, pain, and fear. Do you know what the French call it? Oui, he said, la petite mort. Yes, the little death. That's because the self-detachment felt at orgasm is precisely the same feeling described by people who have had near-death experiences.
That's morbidly fascinating.
It's brain science, Robert. Of course, the problem with sexual climax is that it's frustratingly fleeting. Within seconds of being ecstatically released from all things, your mind rushes back into your body, reconnecting with the physical realm and all its attendant pains, stresses, and guilts. She smiled. Which is another reason we want to do it over and over. The experience of climax overloads the nervous system and releases the mind, much like an epileptic seizure.
Langdon had never associated orgasms with death or seizures, and he suspected the connection would forevermore resurface in his mind at the most inappropriate moments. Thanks a million.
Actually, Catherine said, cocking her head, I just had a strange thought.
You seem to have a lot of those.
Gessner's lab assistant, she said, glancing over. You said this young woman is an epileptic? And she spent time in an institution?
She did. Catherine's brow furrowed.
Don't you find it odd that the CIA would permit Gessner to hire an unskilled Russian mental patient? I mean, I know Sasha only works in Crucifix Bastion in a menial capacity, but it seems like a security risk to have a Russian with brain problems so close to Gessner's work, which I gather is critical somehow to threshold.
I don't see a risk, Langdon countered. Sasha seemed quite stable, and she's certainly no fan of her home country. I think Gessner probably hired her out of compassion.
Catherine laughed out loud. Robert, you're adorable, naive but adorable. Brigitte Gessner, no disrespect for the dead, was a self-serving egomaniac and a ruthless businesswoman. If she hired an uneducated Russian mental patient for her inner circle, it's because Sasha has something Gessner needs.
Well, then, I have no idea what that is.
I might, Catherine said, sounding suddenly more energized. Her eyes were alight. It just occurred to me, and it's something I wrote about in my manuscript.
What is it?
I know you're deeply skeptical about remote viewing, she said, turning fully toward him now, but if Threshold has anything at all to do with remote viewing, then Sasha's epilepsy makes her valuable.
How?
Think about it. The fundamental skill possessed by a remote viewer is the ability to conjure an out-of-body experience. The challenge is that organic OBEs are exceedingly rare, and very few people can actually have them.
Langdon suddenly realized where Catherine was headed with this. Epileptic seizures were described as a peaceful untethering from the physical body, in effect, a brief period of non-local consciousness.
Out-of-body experiences, Catherine continued, are something epileptics experience quite naturally. The epileptic brain is already wired for OBEs, meaning an epileptic would be far more likely to be a skilled remote viewer.
You can't really believe Sasha Vesna is a psychic spy for the CIA.
Why not?
Because I spent time with her. She has a crazy kitten key ring. She's a lost, gentle soul.
Gentle? Catherine challenged. You said she smashed a guy in the head with a fire extinguisher.
Technically that's true, but it was to protect...
Robert, I'll admit, maybe Sasha is not a remote viewer herself, but Gessner could have been studying epileptic brains to find out what makes them so prone to out-of-body experiences. Tapping into detailed neurological information about an epileptic brain could be incredibly valuable for a program trying to detach mind and body.
An interesting idea, Langdon thought, particularly in light of something Sasha had shared earlier today. I forgot to mention that Gessner brought another epilepsy patient to Prague from that same institution before Sasha, a Russian named Dmitry. He received the same surgery as Sasha and was also cured.
I would say that's significant, Catherine said. It's hard to believe that Birgitta Gessner was plucking epileptics from mental hospitals and curing them at her own expense purely out of goodwill. Langdon had to agree it seemed out of character. Moreover, he now realized that a test subject taken from Russia, probably with the help of the CIA, would be entirely off the radar in Europe. A ghost in Prague. "Let's assume for a moment," Catherine said, "that Gessner recruited these epileptics as study subjects for Threshold. That would explain why she was keeping Sasha around. To monitor her." "Yes. Give her a minor job, an apartment, some money. Easy." "I suppose. And Dimitri?" Catherine asked as they neared Folimanka Park. "Where is he now? Still in Prague?" "Sasha said he went home to Russia after Gessner cured him." "I doubt it. Maybe that's what Gessner told Sasha, but if the CIA pulled a test subject from an institution, invested in him, made him a research subject in a top-secret program, would they really just let him go home? To Russia?" "Good point," Langdon thought, accelerating along the stretch of road before them. He craned his neck slightly to look farther down the street. "With luck, we'll have our answers soon." The entrance to Threshold was just ahead.